Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, the largest show on BBS, April 14th, 2007. Also, welcome to all the above-the-ground listeners in Tampa Bay. I know you may be the voice of Tampa Bay. Tonight's guest is going to be a lot of fun. He's going to be one of the first guests of a presentation that we're doing, a Sound Healing Conference in San Francisco on May 11th and 12th. And tonight we have Tom Kenyon, and Tom holds a master's degree in psychological counseling with over 25 years of experience as a therapist. In 1983, he founded the Acoustic Brain Research to document the effects of sound and music on consciousness. His work with the ABR grew out of his observation that sound and music could play dynamic roles in the process of psychological and spiritual exploration and integration. Over the next 10 years, he developed over 30 psychoacoustic programs in the areas of stress management, psychology, brain performance, creative enhancement, intelligence increase, and psychoimmunology. I should be doing all of that myself. He is the He is the author of Brain States, New Leaf Publishing, A Critical Acclaimed Guide to the Brain's Unused Potentials, and Mind Thieves, a quantum suspense sci-fi novel. The current focus of his work is on the use of altered states of the awareness as a means to access the more creative aspects of brain-mind. He regularly teaches seminars and professional trainings in the United States, Europe, and Asia. And before I bring him on, I just want to say that I work with recovering addicts myself, and I have a guy that's 3 years sober who had terminal cancer, which I was able to put on remission, who now works for me. But he was having, after 3 years of sobriety, he was having some psychological problems, and he was getting ready to seek counseling. Well, Tom sent a book down about some channeling he's done with Hathor, and I gave this to my friend, and he's, for the last 2 days, his attitude has changed. He won't put the book down, and I don't think we mentioned that book. So he's got other things he does besides what's on here. This is kind of an understatement, and I've only known him a short time. So, Tom, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So tell us a little bit about your background besides what I've read here, so people, my audience would like to know who the guests are, you know.
When I was a, music was a very much an important part of my life. My mother was a professional singer, and I put myself through college, undergraduate school, partly by playing in lounges and bars, playing piano and guitar, and I discovered that I could change the mood of a room based on the type of music I played, and that came back as a focus about 15 years later when I got into brain research and I was really looking at how sound and music can affect the brain. And I drew on that early period of my life when I was playing popular music. And then I developed music for healing, but the roots of it were much earlier than that.
Now you live up in Washington, correct?
Yeah, I live on a little island up near Canada, up out on the Puget Sound, called Orcas Island. It's part of the San Juan chain.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend of mine, David Tickle. He was on San Juan Island, and we used to have ended up with a stupid boat. We had an old Chris Craft. We used to go to your island. We used to cruise all around. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah, it's great.
With the change in climate, are you still getting all the rains? It used to rain a lot. Is it still raining a lot, or is it starting to dry up?
It's just now starting to get clear. It's nice, beautiful, but we've had a lot of rain as usual.
Yeah, so the dynamic global earth changes haven't really affected you guys that much.
Oh yeah, it's starting to. Summers are hotter, and the winters are getting more precipitation is what, and that's what the weather models are predicting for the Northwest in general.
Yeah. Okay. So, what kinds of things are you currently doing besides this conference, which we'll talk about a little bit?
Well, I've been working in the area of immunology and looking at how sound can help people work on the interface between their mind and their emotions and their immune system. And mostly what I've been doing is teaching a lot. I just finished a workshop in Seattle, and I have two more workshops in the United States, and then I go to Europe to teach, and I'll probably be gone for about a year.
Oh, you're really serious. You're going to be traveling all over Europe then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a good friend of mine named Harold Westbecker that does some very intense, stuff over there. I see on your website the TomKenyon.com that looks like you're holding a Swiss flag over there.
Yeah, we went to, we have some friends in Switzerland. We started teaching there several years ago, and we really like that area. And Judy and I went up to the Matterhorn, and that photo was taken with us with a couple of St. Bernards.
Well, they got some rum in those little canisters around there, and have people
out there
watching.
Yeah, that's the myth. I don't know if they do or not. That's the story. I don't know if they really do or not, but that is the story.
Yeah, that's really good. My friend Harold's from Switzerland. Yeah, that's really cool. And, you know, you've done so much stuff. You know, also, you know, what's the name of that book you gave me? It's something about Hathor. I remember
yeah,
that.
The Hathor material.
I didn't have it long enough. Steve saw it and grabbed it out of my hand. And I haven't, you know, I skimmed it and then it was gone, you know.
I hear
that's
that happens a lot
book,
with my books. Yeah, I hear that happens a lot with my books. People loan them out and then they never get them back. That
yeah.
was that book is from a group of interdimensional beings, which is another part of my work. Much of my work is scientific based, and this is in what emerged through altered states of consciousness as I started to explore those using sound and music as the vehicle. So the Hathors are a group of interdimensional beings, and that book is their information about consciousness and emotion. So maybe your friend was intrigued by what they had to say.
Yeah, I was intrigued. I was skimming. I skimmed the book pretty good. I spent 5 minutes in it before he got a hold of it. The book's called The Hathor Material, right? That's the name of the book.
Right.
And
correct.
And what I looked at was, you know, in our society, I know for a fact that people are suffering depression because they're not on the spiritual path, and they should be on the spiritual path. And I think this is my feeling anyway. The information that I looked at in that book really is a. It's like a manual how to put yourself on that spiritual path. And I think it's very important because a lot of people don't know about, they know about channeling, but they're unable to do it. And they know there's something higher and more inner going on. And it's really
right.
great to see some very, very orthodox person like yourself, you know, who once was a lounge lizard, which is really cool, you know.
Yes,
you know,
right.
I remember when I was going to college, I tried to get a job as a, you know, just, you know, waiting tables and busing, and I didn't qualify, even though I had a master's degree when I was doing for my, you know, my PhD. It's just funny how life works. But I really love that book. Yeah, it is, and I think that book is great, you know. It's got a lot of information on it. What, do you have a phone number? Do they have to go to your website to order that or any of your books, or how does that work? How do you do that?
The best thing is to go to the website do it that way. There is an ordering number if people want it, but to get, there's so many products, as you know, because my work is covering 25 years, and there's so many different directions. You'd almost have to go to the website to figure out what you might be interested in and what would work for you.
Yeah, I know there's a CD in the back of that book, too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's a story of me talking about how the Hathors came into my life and how disruptive it was because I was involved in brain science and highly logical type paradigms, and they came in and just blew that out of the water. And so there's a little talk with me about how that occurred, and then there's samples of their sounds, because their sounds are really what create movement for people. And
right, that sound moves the chakras around.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Shifts the consciousness. The way I've always explained it is that, you know, in our system, we have 7 endocrine glands, and each one of those endocrine glands represents a level of consciousness, which usually manifests as a feeling, like
that's
love.
How I see it as well.
Something from
yeah.
the heart, a feeling, and compassion from the solar plexus. And when you get up in the morning, you know, from being on the astral plane, which is a feeling, then you have a willpower to get out of bed. So I always explain it that way. And the music will intone through the chakra system, which the chakras are really, you know, they're just capillaries. The endocrine glands are just capillaries. So the music relaxes them. And then the hormone comes out, and the hormone I always define as the first unit of biochemistry that possesses consciousness. So this consciousness comes up and orchestrates the brain. So to me, this is my view, your work is orchestrating the brain to go into different dimensions or channeling or healing, or you found a key, in other words, to really unlock a lot of hidden things. A lot of people spend a lot of years, do a lot of effects there and all kinds of drugs, and they never get anywhere. And it sounds like through your work, you can get there pretty fast. Is that, imagine that's why you're traveling so much, right? Okay, great. We're back on here at Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. My guest is Tom Kenyon, and we were just a little bit of a phone problem there. This happens about every 6 months. We're just lucky, you know, it hasn't happened in a while. Tom, I'm looking at one of your things, managing subtle energy during earth changes.
Right.
Being in Southern California, we're very concerned about earthquakes down here, and I remember we had the one in 92 about a minute before the earthquake started, there was obviously no sign of it except my birds at 4 o'clock in the morning. I have all these parrots that I raised, started going crazy in their cages. So I knew they could sense something. And then about a minute later, after my wife chewed me out for playing with the birds at 4 o'clock in the morning, getting upset, which I didn't do anything, the earthquake started. So would you like to go into this? I'm looking at, I guess, it's some of your channelings from the Hathors, managing subtle. Can you want to go into explaining about the earthquakes a little bit? Because I think that's going to be a kind of a big problem here, not just in California, but all around the world, as this ring of fire intensifies.
Yeah, I'll be glad to talk about that. I've just been handed a note that says the music is still on over our voices when
okay.
It's coming over the website. But as far as the according to the Hathors, there are waves of energy and information coming to us from deep space, and it is hitting our sun and then hitting the core of our Earth and going up into the mantle and then up into the surface areas and the fault lines. And they say that essentially it's about whether these earthquakes occur or not as part of the natural progression of Earth, but whether they escalate or not, they say has to do with how we are living on the Earth and
right.
what is happening in the interface between our consciousness and the Earth itself. And so they, in terms of managing energy during one of these events, they talk a lot about a specific platonic solid called the octahedron. They
right.
call it the holon of balance. And they've given me these geometric forms over the years that do different things. But this particular one imparts a sense of balance. It's very interesting. People have been using it all over the world, and we got a lot of feedback from people that it's very simple to engage. A person can go to the website and see how there's diagrams and how to do it. But essentially, you imagine yourself inside this octahedron, and which is basically two square-based pyramids joined at the base.
Right.
And it is a balancing of celestial and earth energies, male, female, and balancing of duality. And when you construct one around yourself through your imagination, the effect is balancing. It's very interesting. It has a calming, balancing effect emotionally and mentally. So they say that they advise people to cultivate this ability to create this holon of balance, this octahedron at will, like a reflex whenever you need it, and that if there's a seismic event or a earth change event or catastrophic event that takes place in terms of large numbers of people, because some of these won't be necessarily a result of earth changes, some of them will be man-made change, man-made, that
exactly.
you put yourself inside the holon, and it will help you be more in touch with your intuition. Instead of going into the frantic fight or flight response, you will be more centered, and you'll have more access to your intuition, which will guide you to be where you should be, when you should be there.
Yeah, this is a nice diagram. This is a good article. I was just looking at it over the web as you're talking about it. And you know, my company makes pyramids, and we actually make these things.
Oh, really?
We don't make them as big as you can go inside, but if anybody wanted one, we could do it. You know, it wouldn't be a problem. Thing is, we just redesigned we make them to go over the bed, which is half.
Oh, yeah, right. I've seen
half
those, yes.
Octahedron. And a lot of other products, too. So it's really interesting to talk to somebody I've never met before, meaning you, and see what all this you've done all on your own here, which is pretty amazing. You're pretty tuned in. So what other interesting things have these guys been teaching you about anyway?
Well, they are very emphatic that one of the necessary emotional states that will facilitate our spiritual evolution is the cultivation of ecstasy, as meaning bliss.
Right, not the drug.
That's what?
Not the drug. That's already been
done.
Not
the drug. No, not the drug. Our brain is a walking pharmacy and produces every pharmaceutical, as you know. But
right.
No, they're talking about the emotion of bliss, joy. And it's really, they say that our planetary culture is so oppressive that the joy and the bliss are taken out of people.
Oh, I totally agree. That's so right on, yeah.
And they say that is a very crucial element to have access to higher levels of information and knowledge. And so a lot of what they give, again, on the website are actual techniques for producing ecstasy, the bliss, the joy. And then what they say is that when you are they call it nested. When you are nested in this field of energy, ecstasy, or joy, you are nested into a higher level of information in the planet and around the planet. And when you're not in those high states, it's easier to get bogged down into what some people call prison planet.
Yeah, well, that's what I call it. You know, Alex Jones calls his website Prison Planet. Pleiadians have always called this a prison planet. Exactly. It's that vibration. It's that animal energy.
Yeah, right.
You know, from my standpoint, you know, Easter, I always, as a tradition, I always watch one of the good Christ movies, you know, the Jesus movies, you know, including the resurrection part. There's always one that I always watch. And that's just the thing. It just sort of brings you back, at least it does me, it brings me back to, you know, once a year, you honor that, you know, that resurrection energy. So I remember watching last Sunday the movie, and I remember when he's sitting there and one of the temple priests comes up, and then the crowd has got this poor woman who is being, you know, caught doing adulterizing. They're getting ready to stone her, and he looks up in the eyes, and the guy says, looks down at Jesus, and what do you do with this one? We caught her, you know. You know, with someone else, adultery. She's a, so we're going to stone her. And then, what would you do? And then Jesus looks up and gives him and says, well, you know, you have no sin, cast the first stone. So take that fast 2,000 years ago, supposedly that happened. Now take it fast forward. Don Imus last week, his sidekick makes a comment about those basketball players in Rutgers, and then. He parroted it, but he didn't even actually say it. It was the guy that hangs out with him all the time did it because I saw it happen. And then about a week and a half later, you know, the planet goes crazy. The Jesse Jackson and everybody is, you know, it's getting fired. The networks go crazy, and the people that really hurt, as Jay Leno said, was the rich guys that put the commercials on. They were the only guys that got hurt. The Rutgers girls immediately forgave him. And so let's move on with this. Let's make this a better experience. But the whole planet, you know, doesn't want that to happen. And so I'm saying to myself, how much progress have we made in the last 2,000 years? What's the difference here from the stoning of Don Imus or the stoning of this poor, you know, adulteress? I mean, it brought things into perspective big time, really fast for me, you know.
Yeah, well, it happens here that we're going to have more of this type of mental agitation. Imbalance both individually and with individuals, with people, and in our society. And they say that's one of the reasons the whole line of balance is a survival tool through this period of chaos, because, as you know, our whole society, the whole world, is in a state of flux and chaos, and sometimes the ride gets very rough. And you're mentioning about Easter reminds me, because this last weekend Judy and I did a workshop with over 400 people in Seattle, which was conducted by Mary Magdalene, another consciousness energy that I work with. And she brought through seven archangels, or some people say archangels. And these were very powerful energies, but they were all about spiritual purification. The seven different approaches, ways of spiritually purifying through sound and energy. And she said, this is what resurrection is. That was her definition of resurrection.
No, I go with that. You know, I have a scientific way of explaining that too, a little bit. You know, we make a device called the nuclear receptor, which is an electrical precursing device, meaning that the electrical precursing energy is something that happens in intelligentsia before a cell makes a division to becoming a free radical, making a disease or something healthy that your body can use. And so we found that with research with this device, that it caused a re-spiraling of the DNA when it was applied to the body. Then we came out with another device a few years later that despirals DNA into the fourth dimension. In other words, the physical is winding up tighter, but the etheric energy is unwinding into another journey, you know, into another space. Where basically there's a threshold of immortality, and I think that's probably similar to what Mary Magdalene is telling you. You know, it's very interesting. I like a different perspective on this, you know.
Yeah, I think
there's some
synergy.
Stuff on on your website too, because I've looked at the Hathors. Where on there on your website would she be?
Well, there's some things on there where you can go. The book is there, the Magdalene manuscript. The information she gave to Judy and I about her life.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see it here.
And
about
a comparison of the different alchemies, because another part of my work is comparing Buddhism and Egyptian high alchemy and esoteric Christianity and Siddhas Yoga and Taoism, because all these traditions say something similar. They point to something that's the same, but they use different language to describe it.
Right.
And people get caught up in the dogma and fight over the dogma when a lot of these traditions are saying the same thing. It's just cloaked in a different culture and a different language. So part of the information in that book is the essence of these in relationship to this type of alchemy that she's talking about.
Right. So what do you think of the Quran and the Islamic views? What's
your feeling on
that?
I'm somewhat familiar with it. I have some Muslim friends, but I'm not versed in enough to really make an intelligent comment.
Okay. I just wondered. You know, Muhammad was a first ray master, and he went out with a sword. And Christ was a second ray master, the way I see it. I'm just from the view of the white brotherhood, and he was healing from the heart. And so I think, and then, of course, Buddha came along before Christ, and he was like a solar plexus master, and he was a master of compassion. That was my kind of way of looking at it. But sometimes I think, like Christianity, for example, 400 or 500 years ago or 600 years ago was pretty rough. You know, the Inquisition wasn't exactly much different than terrorism, as far as I'm concerned.
It was. Right.
Yeah, and I feel that Islamism is similar. And it's a religion in its infancy. Its Bible isn't that old, and its practice isn't that old. It goes back a ways, but I mean, it really didn't get a hold on it until recently. Is my feeling. So.
Well, you mentioned Christianity, and I think one of the sad things for me in the current atmosphere is that the evangelical forms, the fundamentalist forms of Christianity, are what are dominant in the world, and the contemplative traditions, the mystical traditions of Christianity, are not really well known in our culture. But there's a huge tradition that goes back hundreds of years to the early church with a mystical description that is very similar to the yogis of India and what Buddhists would describe, but just in different language. And it's unfortunate that Christianity gets lumped into this evangelical fundamentalist thing when there's roots that are very different.
Right.
If that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Total sense. Now, I'm on one of your manuscripts here on the Magdalene Manuscript, Alchemies of Horus and the Sex Magic
right.
of Isis.
Right.
And I know that you're mentioning a tantric relationship. What do you feel, in the case of Jesus, what do you feel, if you don't mind voicing your views, what do you think about the resurrection? What do you think he physically came back and maybe in a higher body? And that's why in the Garden of Gethsemane he said, "Touch me not, for I have not ascended yet to the Father." Do you think it's because he was too ethereal and he had to have more people kind of believe he was there to bring him down? Where he was viewable, or what, like a phantom or something? How do you look at that? You know, do you have a view on that?
Well, according to what Magdalene told us in the manuscript, was that he attained the Sahu, which is an Egyptian alchemy, because he was an Egyptian alchemist, among many other things, and that he was trained in that tradition. And the Sahu is what's called the light body, and it's a higher vibrational body, and until it stabilizes, it's not good to touch it because it could become more unstable. So I think that's what was going on there.
Yeah, no, that's what I think is going on there. That's exactly my belief. He was more on the astral plane. He was grabbing ectoplasm from somewhere. And here in my house, I know you've never been here, but we're on a vortex. And I bought this house back in 1975. And it's like a temple. Nobody's ever worn shoes in here, and we have candles always burning. You know, they never go out. They're lit by a Rajput prince years ago. And in the living room where this vortex is, are a bunch of crystals, and above that are some of these octahedrons and different pyramid devices. And I know for a fact when you're in a room, your body over a period of time gives off amino acids. And what we have found here is that after a period of time, if we sanctify the area and bring the energy up in a specific area, it allows the protein comes out of the wall or out of the building, you know, wherever it's absorbed, and it allows a being, an angel, to become visible. And we've photographed them here, and they're even on some of my websites. That's been our personal experience. But seeing as Jesus was seen outside, I guess he had to probably pull on the exoplasm from some other from some other level. That's exactly my thing. And it was interesting that that Mary, you know, had that close relationship with him, and I think that close relationship was partially responsible for the ability of Christ to even be seen by anybody, because I think the mother saw next, the mother came next and saw, and then they went down to the, you know, I guess Nicodemus' place where they were all hiding, and then the disciples still didn't want to hear it, you know, the 11 of them that were left. Finally, I guess one of the two Marys gave them a good chewing out, and they went out and they could witness for themselves. I mean, that's kind of how I saw that unfold. How, is that how you see it, or similar, or what?
Well, Magdalene says that she was Yeshua's tantric partner, and they were engaged in high tantra, which is the transmutation of sexual energy into high spiritual vibrations. And she says that he came to her well and drew, just like she drew from his, and they both went upward in consciousness. And so from that perspective, I have no doubt that she was crucial in this whole process of going through the death realms, as she called it, and attaining the higher body and then stabilizing it. And one of the byproducts of it was, of course, the disciples were very jealous of her because of she had a close relationship with Yeshua. And, in fact, it shows up in the Gospel of Thomas and the Gospel of Magdalene. So, it's a whole very interesting area. And I always relate it back, and I know you do too, to quantum mechanics and how does this, because there is a scientific, although we may not have the scientific language yet to fully describe it, there's some elements that are very clearly related to quantum physics and hyperphysics.
Yeah, I agree with that, because having been a contactee of Pleiadians for a number of years, they taught me a lot about propulsion and side continuums and parallel universes, and I've written about some of that stuff. And it always, for some reason, my mind drifts anyway. It always goes back to the physics of this whole transition. And what about the Shroud of Turin? Did you ever get any information from her about that? Because that's another hot item still.
Yeah, no, she hasn't said anything to us about that. But it's a very interesting relic.
Yeah, well, I'd like to know about that. Let me know when she gets into that. That would be interesting, you know. What other areas? What other areas of has she covered besides what we've just discussed? Besides the resurrection, is she? Covered? Did she? Was she? You know, I mean, what other things did she discuss, if anything?
Well, the main thing she talked about is one of the main focuses is the place of sacred relationship and the necessity for the elevation of the feminine in balance to the male. That we have an over-dominated patriarchal society. We are damaging the earth, the environment, ourselves. The United Nations just came out with an evaluation on the quality of life for children, and the lowest rungs in terms of world cultures are Britain is the bottom, the United States is second from the bottom. So we're the richest country on earth, but so many people are depressed and unhappy. And
yeah, we have more people in jail than all the rest of the world combined.
Yeah, this is a very strange situation here.
And
she says that part of this is due to the imbalance, the imbalance that exists between men and women at an archetypal level and also in a cultural level. And so she says that this period that we're in, this chaos, that is, she calls it the return of the feminine, the return of the goddess, in balance to the male principle. So it's about sacred relationship to a living relationship, the template of relationship between men and women in a different way. And,
right.
And she uses that as her relationship with Yeshua as tantric partners. Is the foundation.
Isn't it a perfect example? Yeah, I know that Sannyasi, you know, when the Pleiadians came here, they first came, I was one of the first contactees, Billy Myers, about 4 years later. That was a big thing with them. They always sent women because Sannyasi said, you know, that's less threatening to the male ego. And another thing that she explained to me is, are you familiar with the precession of the equinox, how we go around the Pleiades and the vibratory pattern shifts? Are you familiar with that?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You are?
Yes.
Okay, good. So one of the other things she explained to me, this is the way I interpret it, it's about the same thing you said, is that as we move around the Pleiades, we're going into the Aquarian Age, where people are not believers like they were in the Piscean. They're knowers now. They don't need a Bible or anything. They know from within. And so that increases the the photonic output of the electron in every single cell, and so it causes a big cognition, in the synaptic levels of the brain to interpret this higher sensitivity and have this higher sensitivity. But there is a block, a karmic block, and it's exactly what you said. And they claim it is the female. The female, she says that the family unit of energy is the most powerful unit of energy, even more powerful than splitting the atom, and the most sacred unit of energy is a family unit of energy, and the family has to come into peace with itself through the female. And so it's neat how you get it from one source and I get it from another, and the words are different, but it's the same meaning.
Yeah, and
I guess it's great that you're out there and you're going to go all over Europe and everything, and you're going to be teaching all this stuff, I bet, right?
Yeah, what we'll be teaching in Europe, we'll be doing some of the Magdalene work, and we'll be doing what Hathor's called the creatrix work, which is the principles of quantum mechanics as applied to manifestation. And they're going to be working with the planetary creatrix in July, when we do one of the last two events here in the United States in Seattle, is the planetary creatrix, which is using creative dimensionality to bring positive energies to Earth, to humanity, basically. The Earth's going to be fine. The Earth
may go through
stages. The humanity is the ones that are may not
be
here.
Yeah, humanity will be a little upside down here, you know?
Yeah, right.
And now, when you go up to San Francisco, and we're all up there in about
right.
a month, what are you going to be, what are you going to be talking about? Besides, and then we'll explain to people how to get to that if they don't have a computer out there, because a lot of my radio listeners don't. So go ahead and explain what you're going to be in San Francisco.
Well, the keynote address, I have an hour and a half, and I'm going to basically talk about, I was asked to do a paper for an Austrian medical society out of Vienna on cancer, music therapy and cancer, so I'm going to be using that as a platform to talk about science in a layperson-friendly way about how science has shown that music therapy, the use of sound, can have a positive impact on cancer patients. And then I'm going to talk about the transpersonal aspects of sound, how sound can be used to go into a higher level of ourselves. And then the last 20 minutes or so, I'm going to take people into actual sound healing session, a group session, where I'll use my voice and the various instruments to guide them into a sound healing experience. So theoretical, practical. And then I do a one day after the conference, and that's going to be looking at shamanic journeying from the standpoint of physics and psychology and sound. And I'll take people through various journeys using sound.
Are you going to be doing that at the hotel that we're going to be at, the Cathedral
yep.
Hill?
Right. Okay. The day after the conference is over, I think it's a Tuesday, I do a full one-day training, post-conference training.
Oh, very good. Now, while we're talking here, we have a thing called Quick Chat, and that's where my listeners, because they aren't able to call in all the time. And so on the quick chat, you know, I'm starting to get questions here, and I'm gonna read some of this.
Sure.
Actually, it's called the fast chat, and
That's great.
Yeah, so I'm getting a bunch of people asking me to ask things, and did you do something called immunity?
Yes.
It's something in a CD called Immunity.
Yeah, that was a very interesting experience in that I was doing a sound healer training where I teach people how to use their voices for healing once
right.
a year, and I do again one this year in September in Seattle. But a person asked me if I had anything for AIDS in
right.
Africa. She worked in Africa, and I said, no, I don't, because my work in immunology has always been like global, not specific. And I felt all my guides on the stage, which is a very unusual experience for me, and
right.
I heard myself say yes, I would come up with something. And so my guides basically came to me and said that I told them I didn't have any time to do this, and they said, that's why we're going to wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you will record these sound codes from the different spiritual dimensions. And the reason we have you do it at 3 in the morning is so that the contamination from the collective thought form will be at its lowest, and
yeah,
your
I totally
thought forms
get that.
Won't be, right, and your thought forms, my thought forms, won't be contaminating either. So for about 4 weeks, every morning around 3, with some exceptions, I was awakened. I would go down to the studio, and a different being, a spiritual being, would come through and make these sounds, which I recorded. There's 32 different sound healers, spirit healers, their voices brought through my voice and recorded. And I'll never forget one of the, I mean, there were so many experiences, but one stands out where an African shaman came forward and was going to, he used plant spirit medicine, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with that, it's a tradition in South America and Africa where you go to the spirit of a plant and that spirit assists with healing. And the plants that he
used... I'm a little bit familiar with it, but I'm nothing like you. Go ahead.
And the plants that he used, because he was from another time, no longer existed in Africa because of the desertification. They were gone.
Right.
And there was a moment where he was in absolute grief. And then it was an incredible thing to see where he mobilized himself and went into the spiritual realms to find the spirits. Even though their bodies as plants were no longer in Africa, he went to the dimensions where they were spiritually and brought them back, and he sang their songs into this. And so it's a very complex tonal matrix of sound that is used. The first thing was for immunity, to help with cancer, AIDS, all types of viruses. But what I found is that it's very helpful for all types of healing, but especially as a form of spiritual purification, because it goes, the sounds, of course, everything is related to vibration. And there's so many vibrational energies, it's like having a vacuum cleaner go through your subtle bodies.
Right.
And we're beginning incredible feedback from people all over the world that are using it.
Now, that should answer Dee's question. And then Del Rey, 19, she says, Namaste souls, my viewpoint of is Mary Magdalene Joshua were twin flames. How do you comment to that? Does that make any sense to you at all?
Yeah, by twin flames, I think they might mean the word soulmate. You know, I don't know. That they were very deeply connected. There's no question. What Mary said, Magdalene told us, was that she was doing a job. She was trained for that in the temples of Isis, trained to actually be a tantric partner to a high-level master. And
right,
when she met Yeshua, she knew that he was the one for her and she was the one for him. That he, in other words, when she was being trained, she knew it was for someone very high, but she didn't know who he was. When she saw him, she knew, he knew, and she says Mary, the mother, knew.
Right.
And so what she said happened was what was a job turned into a deep love affair. She actually fell in love with him. So she hasn't used the word twin flame, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was not the case.
Yeah, no, it sounds pretty interesting. Now that immunity thing, and that's a CD, and that could be got off your website, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now here's another question from somebody. Please elaborate on the benefits of sound healing and daily usage. In other words, I think they want to know how much a day, if you're doing on a therapeutic level for maintenance, would you recommend,
right,
and what would you recommend?
Well, the research in neurophysiology is very clear that if a person listens to music that increases alpha activity, which means
right,
a light, relaxed awareness, for 20 minutes a day, it has a therapeutic effect. It decreases stress hormones, lowers heart rate, respiration, muscle tension lets go, and the parasympathetic nervous system starts to be engaged, and the self-healing mode starts to gear in. So if a person would listen to some type of relaxing music for 20 minutes a day, more or less, then that would be a very good thing for them to do. Out of my collection, I have something called Soma that was developed specifically for that, and it has three different 20-minute tracks on there, too, just for that purpose.
Soma, S-O-M-O?
S-O-M-A, Soma.
Okay, S-O-M-A, Soma, okay.
Now, in classical music, a person could go to Baroque music, if they like that type of music, and listen to what's called Largo, L-A-R-G-O, movements. And the Largo
right,
movements increase alpha activity, and this was discovered in Bulgaria by Dr. Lazanov in the 60s. So that's so any type of classical music that has a Largo movement will be slow, and it entrains the breathing, respiration, and then you get this decrease of stress hormone effect.
Okay. Yeah, I remember back when I was hanging out with the Moody Blues for 15 years. I was a clarinet player, and I played in, you know, orchestras. It was fun. But high school stuff mostly, and then nothing in college. I put the darn thing down, and I loved I loved the Baroque music, and I became a great Baroque fan. And then the Moody Blues brought me back somehow. I sort of got lost it there for a while. I got into becoming one of these greedy industrialists for a number of years with the goal of making a lot of money and being stupid, which I did all that. I'm very stupid, you know. And then I finally woke up, and then I got into a Mellotron. I have an M5 Mellotron here, which... Mark V, you know, I have a lot of, I just love the old, it's got violin, flutes, and cellos on it. To me, that those are some of the greatest feeling sounds on the planet, you know.
Right, it has a soft timbre, and the timbre, or the tone quality, is crucial. That's quality.
That's really important. So now, do you have any phone numbers that people can reach you at that don't have computers, that aren't able to,
Well, there's an... I can give you an ordering number, but as I said, there's so many. If somebody goes to the website, we have Soundings, which is our newsletter, that they can download and print, and that has all the information about the product.
Remember, people don't all have computers out there listening to this tonight.
And then they can call if they're in the United States, 1-888-649-5670. That's 888-649-5670, and that's where they can get further information. They could request the soundings be sent to them by mail if they're in the United States. We can't send it to Europe, so Europeans have to download it off the computer.
Okay, so we do have 104 countries on our chain here.
Right,
so
that's why
the rest
we have it.
Are going to have to do the computer then. There's no
That's why we put it on the computer, on the website, so that people can download it in Europe, because it's a thick magazine and it's expensive to mail. We give it free as a gift. It's our gift to the world. Judy and I write in it. Every year or so we come out with, it's like 100 pages of pure articles. If a person's interested in workshops, they shouldn't call the ordering number. They should call 360-376-5781. That's 360-376-5781. That's where we do the workshops from.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got some pretty good-sized workshops.
Yeah, the last one especially.
So you keep pretty busy. I know workshops are a lot of work. I've been doing one a year, and you do them all the time.
Yeah, it's very demanding work. You know, another part of what we're doing that we haven't gotten to, because there's so much to talk about, is recently we went into Tibet, because we founded something called the Sound Healing Foundation, and we are going in to save or archive sound healing among indigenous peoples and different forms of sound healing. And we went into Tibet and for the first time ever recorded Tibetan nuns in their nunnery chanting. And that CD just came out and is about because in the West, many people know about the monks chanting, but very few people know about the nuns. And the nuns are exquisite in their sound practices and in the instruments that they use. And so,
what instruments do they use?
Well, they use longhorns. You know, longhorns are those Tibetan horns that are very difficult to play.
Is that like a rangoon, or not?
A rangoon? No, it's it's a giant trumpet, really, that ranges from 6 to 18 feet.
Yeah, I've heard of those.
Feet.
Yeah, go ahead, tell us about those.
And they're used to drive away negativity. And usually men are the ones who use this. And in this particular nunnery, they have several nuns that play these horns. So it is extraordinary from a sound standpoint to actually hear women playing these horns very expertisely. And the recordings are an attempt to bring this the feminine back, another aspect of bringing the feminine back in balance to the male. And all the money, because it's non-healing, non-profit foundation, all of the profits go back to the nuns, straight to Gyantse, to the nunnery. And that's unusual, because usually in musicology, people go in and record something, and then they take the money, and it never goes back to the people. And
yeah, now, do you have any trouble with the Chinese when you go into Tibet at all? Is it hard to get in there, or how does that work?
It's very hard to get in there. We took our stuff in under wraps. There were officials who knew what we were doing, and the nuns, the monasteries and the nunneries knew what we were doing and supported it. But as far as the Chinese were concerned, we couldn't tell them what we were doing. It's legal, but they wouldn't
allow it anyway.
Well known for confiscating equipment, and you can't do anything, so we kind of snuck it in.
Yeah, I remember when I used to go to Europe and play concerts, I used to fill out this big, long thing for customs with all the serial numbers of all the instruments I was taking over there, because I used to rent some of them over there. and then coming back, I forget what that was called, but, you know, and then you had to show everything, you're bringing it back, you didn't sell it over there. So are they still hassling the Tibetans, the Chinese, and busting up their temples? Or
They are, and it's such a political situation. We don't really focus on that. Focus on the nuns are not focusing on the political issues. They're sharing the sound healing methods that they've been using for hundreds of years, and that's what we're bringing to the world, and the money comes back to the nunneries. The Chinese are okay with the CDs going out and making money for the nunnery, because they actually are getting more capitalist in their orientation about things. So it's fine. We just don't deal with any of the political issues, of which there are many.
Yeah, I know. What Richard Gere?
There's no country in the world that does not have political issues now.
I know. I support Richard Gere's thing with the Dalai Lama. That's what I've been involved with a little bit, but that's really good. So, this CD is also available on your website.
It literally just came back from the duplicator. It's probably going to be another week before a person can get it on the website. But yes, it's going to be on the website, and they can go to the Sound Healing Foundation, which is info@soundhealingfoundation.org, and get it that way. But it will also be on my website in probably about another week or so.
Yeah, I'm going to order that. I really want to hear that. That's something I've never heard. I didn't even know about it till tonight. I always love to have guests like you on to teach stuff.
Yeah, it's a landmark recording for many, many reasons.
Yeah, no kidding. It really sounds great, you know. It really does. So anyhow, go ahead, and we got a little bit of time left, but I want to make, we got new listeners coming on for the next show, and they'll be getting part of this. And then, once again, give me, put your website out there, and then your phone numbers for the seminar, those two things, so that we get that really well covered.
The ordering number, you said?
I mean, later, because they didn't listen, you know?
Yeah, right. The ordering number is 888-649-5670, and the workshop number for the last two workshops we're doing in the United States, 360-376-5781.
And now, is there any more openings at the one that you're going to do? Well, it'll be on the 13th of May is when you're going to do that independent one, right?
Yeah. There's still openings. Yeah, it's a large room they're doing it in.
And what number do they call for that?
That's the
So they can find them up there if they come to it, because we do have a lot of Bay Area listeners.
Yeah, they could just come to the conference, and Globe Recording is the people that are putting this on, and that's who they would, if you know what David Gibson's contact is, because I don't have it here with me. You're going to be at that with me, right?
Yeah, I'll be there up there, too. Yeah, well, we're going to have, hopefully Don from BBS Radio is going to be coming in with some recording equipment, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because after this, I'm sure that there's things that happen there that we're going to want to incorporate into BBS Radio, because we're kind of a progressive, somewhat new age, although we cover everything, company, I guess you could say. We're about 2.5 years old and growing. We're becoming like the largest internet in the world now.
That's what I heard. Yeah,
yeah, it's doing
good
pretty good. And we're really glad you're on here tonight. And any other things, because we got about 3 minutes left or 2 minutes left, any other things, areas that I, you know, as a host, failed to bring up that you might want to bring up to the audience?
Because
I'm getting a lot of people, a lot of compliments are coming up. I'm just not reading them all, but they're really, audience is really enjoying it, and they're saying thank you to me for bringing you on. Definitely creating a spiritual awakening in a lot of them. So what else would you like to say in closing?
Well, the contact phone number for Globe, if they want to come to that San Francisco event with you, is 415-777-2486. My website is www.tomkenyon.com. And you said, I believe the engineer said, I sent you some audio files of samples of the Hathor sounds and a sample from Soma, and you're going to put that on your website as an archive. So I guess whenever you put that up, your listeners could go there and listen to what the Hathors actually sound like through me.
I'd like to see that. I'd like to hear it, rather. Yeah, that would be really interesting. Any other things you want to cover that, in all of this?
Well, the only other thing is, in addition to the Hathor Creatrix training, which is 6th through 8th in Seattle, around Labor Day, I do the Sound Healing training, and that's where people come literally from all over the world to study with me for 5 days and how to use their own voice for healing. And I cover the science and the esoteric knowledge and the various aspects of sound healing. So when a person leaves that training, they know how to use their voice to help heal themselves and others, and how to explain it to others in terms of a scientific explanation. And that's a very popular training. It's one I really look forward to every year. So that if this person's interested in a hands-on experience with sound healing, that's a great way to get it.
So when are you going to Europe? Right after the conference, or what?
Right after that. Right after that, we head to Amsterdam, and then we are six weeks. We go through many, many European cities, including Hungary, Austria, Germany.
You've been over there before, I know. So
several times.
I mean, northern Italy, Austria, it's so beautiful. Vienna, I love
Vienna. It's
gorgeous.
I love Vienna. Beautiful architecture.
Yeah, that's my town. I think I went to school there and studied art at some point in one life, you know.
Right.
I fell in love with that town. Oh, my God, it's so beautiful. I'm heading out there, too, probably in the fall. But I'll hang out here in the summer. Well, we're done now. We're out of time. I just got to
Okay.
Eat.
All right.
So tonight's guest was Tom Kenyon. Thank you, listeners, for all the emails in the chat room. We appreciate Tom Kenyon coming on the show tonight. And we look forward to seeing Tom at the Sound Healing Center conference. So come on up, check the websites out. And it's 8:05. We went 5 minutes over. We've balanced our energy. And thank you very much for listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Goodbye until next week, and may all of you be well.